Welcome to Six Again, your go-to rugby league podcast with hosts Adam Hoy and Jared Newton. Let's kick off.
Alrighty, we're on the final stretch. Round 18 is done. 7 games to go in the 2022 NRL season. Adam and Jared are with you. Yeah, Jared's back for good or bad. And we've got 8 games to wrap up from the weekend. Lots of news around NRLW and Women's Rugby League, including the World Cup. We've got one coach chucking a sook and for no real justified reason. And we've got another club. We've got another club's coach telling the NRL to stay the hell out of it. In this situation, I think we both believe him to be in the clear or in the right. But we'll get to that. We'll see. Big weekend of footy, first full weekend back after the State of Origin series. So it'll be 8 games on the slate from here on out till the end of the season. And this is really crunch time for a number of teams in and around the top 8. We'll get to all that, where everyone's standing, and anything else that pops up. Have I missed anything there?
No, well, you know, we're only at the start. We've got plenty of time to catch up if you do.
Yeah, true. Cool. So I'm Adam, by the way, the Seagulls supporter. Jared is the Knights supporter. So we had our rivalry round second of the year, and Manly takes out the rivalry this year.
This is the first year we've been doing the podcast that Adam's actually, I think Adam's actually beat me. Newcastle beat me the last 2 years.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. I had to wear your Knights jersey on the podcast, didn't I?
Yeah, you didn't fucking remember to do that one this time, did you?
Well, I'm going to have to drop my, jersey in your mailbox tomorrow for next weekend. Done. All right. So we are going to start over at footytips.com.au. The 6AM Footy Tipping Comp, sponsored by Hop Nation Brewing. Heaps of their limited edition big cans in most good bottle shops at the moment. I'm not going to say all commercial bottle shops. I'm just going to say good bottle shops. Get in and try their range. Core range still awesome as well. So I went out in the flyer because I picked the Tigers thinking, you know what? If they're going to win at least one more game this year, it's going to be against a third string NRL side. No, they couldn't even get that done. So
then I was to blow up after it.
Yeah, and then I was praying for Canberra to win. Not that I tipped them, but it's the second time this year that I didn't want people getting a full round, so I didn't drop by 2 points. It was only one. So that happened. Whew. See? Karma does work. We had a lot of people get 7 out of 8, and then a lot of people get 6 out of 8, and really only a couple getting 5s and 4s. I'm not going to read them all out, but a lot of the usuals up there, methodical. Flamethrower jumps back up. We haven't seen them for a bit. Ben Hunt for Dally M. That's Nicky Wall. 7 out of 8 there. And also Rocking Horse Road, keeping up their recent and good tipping. So if we have a look at the total score at the comp at the moment, it's Rocking Horse Road with a 2-point lead. Only 7 rounds ago, 116 points. The Irk, 114. Myself and Reggie Sidestep, 113. Timbo 21 on 111, and they're your top 5. And out of the top 5, only Rocking Horse Road got 7. The rest of us got 6, hence why they've taken a 1-point lead there. Over on the street competition, which I haven't looked at for a little bit, I don't think. You haven't done one in a little while. We've got currently Timbo 21 on a streak of 10. But still the longest streak of the year is underscore R3 with 15, and time's running out to catch them. So get on that. All right. We're going to kick off with some World Cup news, and not for the 2023 World Cup, but for the 2025 World Cup. I should have said 2022, shouldn't I? It's going to be this year. So the women's game's continuing to increase, and it's increasing on the world stage as well. So for this upcoming World Cup, the women only have 8 teams in the tournament. Men have 16. So it's been announced today that for the 2025 World Cup in France, where men's, women's wheelchair and youth International Rugby League World Cups will be all held at the same time, there will be a qualification tournament for 8 more positions in the women's game. So the 8 countries currently in the World Cup will get their positions, as well as two teams each from Asia Pacific, Europe, Americas, and Middle East Africa. So each of those regions will have their own play-in tournament for two positions at the World Cup. So an example in our region, Asia Pacific, you'd have teams like Fiji, Samoa, and Tonga playing off to pick up the remaining two positions. Australia, Cook Islands, New Zealand, and Papua New Guinea will retain their spots. So this kind of brings it in line with the Soccer World Cup, standard Rugby League World Cup for the men, where you've got the playing competition, which is going to be really awesome to watch in what's only going to be a couple of years' time. So really good news for international Rugby League all around there. There's really no downside for more a rugby league. Men's World Cup, any changes? Oh, sorry, I did get one thing wrong with the women. Middle East Africa gets one berth, not two, and Americas get three. So that makes up the four there. Cool. Anything on that, Jarrod?
No, really. Interesting. How many players who are playing in the NRL women's double for different nations in over Australia? That's a big deal in rugby league now for the men. It'd be interesting what happens on the women's side of things. How many nationalities are playing in the NRL women's, which is always good to see.
Yeah, about time that there's some controversy in the NRLW that only the NRL could create with their rule structures. We'll see.
No, they don't have controversy. What are you talking about? There's nothing sensible about the rights they have.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. It won't take long. West Tigers won something. Not their men, obviously, but their West Tigers women's side in the New South Wales Premiership won the championship there, defeating Cronulla 21-20 in a Golden Point Grand Final. So 20 all after full time. Sammy Bremner scored under the post to take a 20-14 lead for the Sharks. The Tigers came back and scored the match-tying try. And then after 80 minutes, couldn't be locked. It was a deadlock, couldn't be split. Went into Golden Point with West Tigers picking up the victory. So let's have a look here. Jess Surge is playing for the Tigers. So she's now got, obviously, a women's premiership ring to go with the NRLW trophy and the Women's Origin Shield. So she's had a pretty decent year for herself there. And Curtin, I'm just trying to find Curtin's first name here. I hate when I jump in and I've missed the first bit here. And then I'm trying to find the first name. It's probably in the big letters. Emily, there it is. Thank you. Emily Curtin, the Tigers halfback, was the one kicking the field goal. So congratulations to West Tigers and putting some, that's the word I'm looking for, silverware in their trophy cabinet. First time since 2005.
Yeah.
I believe.
pretty damn hard to be pulling that off.
It's true. And last one on NRLW, clubs return to training for probably the most open season in the NRLW with so many players shifting and moving around clubs. We've got AFL players or XFL players in, new Rugby Sevens imports coming in. Some of the players that have already had four seasons are going to be more experienced. So teams are back in training ahead of the kickoff of season five on the 20th of August, which will be the Eels and Roosters at CommBank Stadium. I can't wait for that. All right, stories in and around the NRL. Now, Jared brought it to my attention that we didn't actually mention that the Warriors have a coach for next year. Who is he, Jared? Where's he come from? What's his story?
Andrew Webster, I think he's the attacking coach for the Penrith Panthers. Assistant coach, very highly regarded, but obviously considered by the NRL people second in line to Kevin Serrato. Well, he's relatively unknown, which is a good and a bad thing because no one actually knows what he's going to be like when he comes in.
Well, it's better than reinventing the wheel, isn't it? Because they've tried that twice.
Well, I don't know. Like, he has no points in the bank, which means that the Warriors...
I don't think that's actually a saying. But keep going, sorry. Whatever. I just had an Anchorman, like, flashback.
yeah, has no collateral in his way. He's not got no premierships in even England at all that Nathan Brown had. No NRL coaching experience, so I'm guessing he's on a lower contract or a high contract, but with performance incentives, I don't know.
Reported here first.
But no. I'm a big fan of performance incentives in NRL coaches' contracts. Considering, like...
Aaron's got one in his own relationship, that's why. Well,
there's some news coming your way soon. It's going to prove that.
I'm waiting for a fist to come through the screen there. Aaron's relationships revolves around a contract involving performance.
Well, actually talking about relationships. So me and Clay should be just 7 years. How long have you been married, I hear, now? Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about performance incentives.
Maddie and I had our 12-year wedding anniversary yesterday. No, yeah, yesterday, 7/8.
What'd you do?
We took the kids to Aussie World.
And there is parenting right there, isn't it? No one knows the content. It's been kind of really quiet about this whole thing. I don't mind that. There's not that much controversy around it, but or fanfare as well. So, yeah, this is, well, represents it well. And, you know, just...
Yeah, I with everything else that was going on around that time, supposedly it came out on the 8th, so we're doing smack bang in the middle of Origin and buy rounds and all that sort of stuff. I'm a fan. I hate seeing just the revolving merry-go-round of coaches. I'm out of this job. I'll get that one in that club and all that, and then head coaches becoming assistant coaches till I can come back in. It'd be cool to have some fresh blood. We're very excited when Holbrook came in for the Titans. That hasn't panned out, but at least there was excitement there about a new voice and new personality in the league.
Payton got the Cowboys job. That was exciting. There's a few there that we were pretty all over. That was good, but
yeah, we'll see what he can do.
Let's just hope he can just do something. The Warriors talent. That's on the Bible.
All right, so
hopefully he just wants to live in New Zealand too.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know why people like saying no to it. There's so many positives living there than here, but
that's if you're over here every week, like what was there's all the European soccer players who played, but I don't know if he's the highest or not, but they reckon Simon Mannering was the sportsman who travelled the most in the world. And that's just been hopping between Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah, could
he was close to being the highest travelled sportsman in the world as far as just pure kilometres or miles, however you look at it, goes.
Be interested in so many North Queensland Cowboys players, Rob.
It would be fucking get tired. Tiring.
Oh, 100%. Do that. So what else was going around? Bevan French set a Super League record, 7 tries in, was it Wigan's 60-0 victory over Hull? And that's a remarkable achievement. And of course, as soon as you go and look at the comments, oh, he didn't have to work hard to score most of his tries. Oh, that wouldn't happen. All right. In the NRL, I'm like, yeah, no, it hasn't happened. Also, it hadn't ever happened in the Super League. It's not like this is a weekly occurrence. There were a couple of lucky tries in there where he got the bounce, but the majority, he had to do stuff in order to be able to score the try. He didn't give the tries on a platter. He had the fullback jersey on, but he ended up playing on the wing, and he has beefed up, eh? I remember him just going over this tiny little whippet sort of thing. He's thick through the chest and the core, and he's obviously hasn't lost any of his pace, or maybe half a step, but that's still more so than everyone else on the field. So congratulations, Bevan French.
Hey, Maddie.
Sorry?
I just heard Mads. Good on him. You took out and said he was probably not as talented to survive his size in the NRL, if that makes sense. Like, if you're going to be that small, you have to be a lot better than he was in the NRL. put on a bit of size. Good on him. Look, I wouldn't be surprised if some NRL club picked him up sooner rather than later. Not the worst option.
When he was at Parramatta, he was real good at finishing tries. But yeah, he just lacked size. And when he was in he was literally unstoppable. But
we all knew he's a step above the English players anyway. So
yes. And so I'm just having to look through where is it? Jai Fields doing really well this season, by all accounts. But I'm just having a look at the there it is. I'm just on the Super League website now. It's not the most friendly website to move around, just saying. So yeah, tables. So it was Wigan on the weekend and they beat Hull. Yeah, so Hull's sixth. And Wigan is second. So it's not like they were beaten up on the bottom teams. So at this moment, Hull's season is 19 games played, 9 win, 10 losses. Wigan's is 14 wins, 5 losses. So this wasn't an upset with regards to who won the game, but it was definitely a surprise with regards to what the scoreline was. So yeah, congratulations to Bevan there. That is remarkable. What's not remarkable is a coach whinging about another coach's lineup call, lineup decisions. So,
look, I want to tell you, this is hilarious. So, Brett Kamoy said it was disrespectful in the post-match press conference for the Penrith to rest their players. I would have copped that if you want. I probably wouldn't have copped it then, but I would have believed it a lot more if they won. So Tigers actually lost to Penrith, and he said it was disrespectful they rested the Origin players, which, you know what? I think they're 4 points ahead. It was 4 or 6 points ahead on the top of the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
They're not fighting for the 8. Nope. Why the hell not? Like, it was a good move by Cleary. I would consider doing it in the second week. Like, why the hell not? Like, what does it matter? This seems like Brett Kamoli has a bit of a chip on his shoulder and going. Doesn't want the rest of the NRL to rightfully think that the Tigers.
I think Kamoli needs to focus on his club, what he's meant to be doing as their coach and in training, because whatever the hell they're doing isn't enough, because they just got beaten by an NRL club resting, what's it, 8 or 7 of their starting 13. And lost. I don't care if it was only by 2 points. You freaking lost. Focus on your own club. Their performance was more disrespectful to the Tigers than Penrith resting their players.
Yeah, it was bad form. And Adam's spot on. Like, mate, you've got a lot bigger concerns than what Penrith did. That's also an issue within the Tigers, that he's so worried about another club.
Yeah.
Melbourne Storm, Penrith Panthers, Sydney Roosters, right now North Queensland Cowboys, and whoever else is up for Brisbane are up there right now.
Yeah, Broncos usually. The top Manly, five Manly teams, is a pro at it as well.
No, but the top five teams. They don't give a shit about any other team.
No.
They will look at a team and go, how can we break you? They won't go, these guys rested these blokes. That's disrespectful to me. Like, yeah, and then another funny thing about this is that earlier in the year, Tigers beat Penrith because they rested their Origin, they couldn't play their Origin stars, and thought they were fucking world beaters.
Yeah.
So
two last things on this.
Pick a lane, dude.
You earn respect, and Penrith have earned the right to rest the players because they put their team in a position where they're not battling for the wooden spoon, they're battling for the Premiership trophy. Is a bit of a difference. And he's rewarding their players for a lot of football over the last 2 years. And Kamoli knows he would be doing the exact same thing. And the other side, the Panthers were doing the Tigers a favour and they didn't take advantage of it.
I think Penrith would have done that against every other team comp. The thing about it is that, and this is just another follow-up, Nathan Cleary went to Bali. It was like 18 hours or something after the Origin. This is a bloke who played in the last two grand finals. I don't remember him being injured for overly amount of time.
Just come back from that off-season shoulder surgery. Just missed
the first few weeks. Yeah, but he would have been rehab the entire time, like going hard at it. Played two grand finals in a row. He's played the last three or four Origin series in a row. So he's played, over 25 games a year, possibly around about. End of this year, and we're not going to get into it here, but, there's a legitimate chance he'll be playing for Australia in the World Cup. We're not going to argue about the teams right now, because we went over that too much over the weekend. Well, we're both drinking, I'm assuming, because I was. But he's going to be playing the World Cup. So this year, there's a decent chance he's going to be playing up to 30 games of top-flight football. This was the perfect time to just go, mate, you've earned the right. Go sit down go to Bali, just have a few drinks, relax, come back, get your mind right, and we'll go for a charge for the final. Because, unfortunately, there's no other time for Nathan Cleary to rest until, he might have an extra 3 or 4 weeks off after the World Cup while everyone else is at training for Penrith. Might have just a month, possibly,
before we'll see next year. You're talking about Penrith's success. And, we're talking about they've earned the right to have the rest. Favourite tweet from the weekend. A big Penrith supporter, ex-Penrith cheerleader. One of the good followers on Twitter, actually, for opinions, put out, was definitely not the best performance, but it was a win. Getting through the Origin period without a loss is absolutely incredible. So proud of my club. Another guy that I follow from Manly put on there. What are you talking about? Penrith lost Origin 3. And she was like, actually, that's actually pretty good call.
Actually, that's actually a funny thing to bring that up, because early 2000s, when Broncos were super strong, how heavyweights, they were decimated during Origin period, like 8-9 players like Penrith are now. And they were known, it was expected to have an Origin hangover by the Broncos or lose a few games to the Warriors. And this actually shows you how strong Penrith are, because that team back then were full of absolute legends, Australian players, probably more international players than what's playing for Penrith right now. And they did drop a lot more games during the Origin period than what Penrith did now. So that's even better for Penrith. Holy shit.
Yeah, I think clubs all round are working out ways to best manage their way through it. And I think they're in a better position to do so as well, with the younger players being much more capable of stepping in, because the New South Wales Q Cup, that sort of stuff's at such a high level than it was. But, yeah, you've got to give credit to Penrith getting through completely unscathed with regards to results. Let's go from one coach to another.
So I just wanted to mention, I know Adam's going to watch this after, but Cameron Smith won the US, was it US Open or?
Oh, he won the Open.
Won the Open. Good on him. He won it. And much as I hate to say it, I wasn't here around for it. I don't like the bloke, but he did make the final. Nick Kyrgios did lose Wimbledon. We'll leave that there because I don't like
him. That was fantastic. But
good on him for making it.
No, I had no interest in that final whatsoever. But the Cameron Smith winning the equally, or probably most, it's so hard to say, but most prestigious golf tournament, albeit the Masters being very close. But I do edge the British Open just through the history of it. Absolutely incredible. And if you see the course that they were playing on, St Andrews is ridiculous. Ridiculous. And that's what I'm going to go watch the final round of on replay after we finish this. Finally, so we spent, the kids loved it. They love watching it with us sitting there just eating, asking questions. It's brilliant. Ricky Stewart. Now, supposedly, a radical proposal was reported during the week of Origin 3 this year suggesting that the Rugby League Players Association and NRL are going to explore the option of mandating the fact that players can't back up after Origin due to welfare issues. And Ricky Stewart said, I can't see how that's an NRL decision. He's 100% correct. That should be a club decision. Again, 100% correct. Coaches aren't given enough credit for what we do from a high-performance point of view for our players. If I thought Papali needed to rest, I'll give Josh a rest. Josh rested through the three Origin games, so he should be fine. But what the hell is the NRL even getting involved in this for?
This is not the NRL. It's the Players Association.
No, but it says and NRL are going to explore the option.
Yeah, because the NRL they have to explore. They have to explore everything that the NRL's Players Association bring forth. That's just what they have to do.
Wouldn't that be like the Board of Governors looking into it?
Ricky Stewart's 100% on point. And another thing about it is that not many people are getting is it's not even that. It's the players who genuinely make the decision anyway. Like, a perfect example, Josh Papali. Josh Papali has got enough credit in the bank, or whatever you want to call Adam. Mm-hmm. I fucked it up earlier. To go, mate, I'm done. I can't play this weekend for this reason, yeah. I don't feel up to it. It's not. And another thing about it, it's not like there's a significant amount of injuries to Origin players the week after. Like Ponga and Cherry Evans probably played the best games they have for club all year after that Origin game on the weekend.
Take that momentum into it.
Yeah, it's just over management, overthinking, and he's got to let it go how it always goes. And see, the thing about these Origin games that, as Adam said previously, was that wanting the 3 weeks round in the middle of the year. The thing about these Origin games is, as a club, you love your players getting picked for Origin, means you've done right. If it's a homegrown talent, you've developed him correctly. If it's a bought player, you bought correctly. If they're willing, if they're good enough to go to Origin.
Yeah.
Hard and fast of it is that, I've said it before, it'd be hard for a coach to sit there, Adam O'Brien and Des Hazard watching Caelan Ponga and Terry Evans go so hard at Origin in case they got injured. Yeah. Like, there's no overly massive benefit for the club to let these players do it. And if they're going to be losing players more, 2 weeks in a row they lose them because they obviously have to wait the rest of the week before the game and then they're allowed to play the week after. There's no benefit for the club to allow them to play. Like, they're essentially spending $1.2 million on Ponga and there's a definite, 6 weeks of the year he's not going to be able to play?
Yeah.
5 weeks if you conclude a buy. So that's just not in the club's best interest to do this. And
it's not in the media's best. It's not in the broadcaster's best interest either to have all the Origin players out for those games.
Every time it's brought up, someone blows up and goes, it's not worth watching that round because they're out. It's always a headline every single year.
Yeah. No, a couple other points.
I'm pretty sure Buzz Rothfield leads it.
The clubs have, and Jared's going to love this, the clubs have a hell of a lot more data on their players with regards to what their bodies can handle, the workload they've been under in a game. And as Stuart said, it's not the games themselves, it's the workload of training throughout the week. So those Origin players, they'll probably just be doing complete recovery sessions while the rest of the team is training in order to be able to get the body right for the next game.
Guarantee you.
And the NRL won't have access to all that data if the clubs don't choose to release it.
That all the Queensland players had what they did, they requested their teams to have two ice baths ready.
Yeah.
One for the beer and one from the city while they watched the boys train and yelled encouragement from the fucking ice bath. That's what happened. Yeah. I think that's a great idea, great way to celebrate those boys. Sit there with a few other blokes in your team. FaceTime and the other players in the Queensland team just sit there yelling chat out in an ice bath with a few beers under your belt at the team who's training.
If you want to be here next year, you got to put in work harder than that. Let's go.
That's like the ultimate spot for their training slot.
So I think one thing that the RLPA will lean on is that during the regular season, there has to be a minimum of 5 days between club games to ensure workload and all that sort of player management. the difference here is this is three games throughout the year. The 5 days between club games makes sense because as you go over a 25-week season, there's a hell of a lot more wear and tear, and that builds upon, builds up in the body. If you're not having the full recovery that you need to, that will lend to injuries later in the season. I get that argument, but that's completely different to three
the performance separated
three separate specific instances throughout the season.
Performance dudes for the Origin team seem 5 days.
Yeah.
The NRL performance management team for each individual team seem for 52 weeks. And that's all you need to know.
Uh-huh. And the last point on that, if this is what the RLPA is wanting, and it's going to go against everything that's already in line, they're going to then have to give up something else because this is a huge thing they're asking for. So I don't see it happening, especially not in the near future.
I'm on the fence with these folks. 50-50. Like sometimes it's like, yeah, that's a good idea. But other times I'm like, are you just saying shit to one, become relevant, and two, keep players paying you wages? I fuck off.
Yeah. You can't ask for more money and then ask also to pay less.
Yeah, I just sit there sometimes. I'm just like, why just sit back. The players have got it good right now. Just relax. Yeah. Until another player does get Corrigan, does get caught with Corrigan, then you jump in and represent. After that, you just walk away.
All right, let's jump over to some signings news. So Anthony Milford has decided not to stick around at the Knights or re-sign for next year. He's informed the Knights he will depart at the end of the season and return home to Queensland. After signing with a rival club, rival clubs are Dolphins. Just throw that in there.
Funny if you're in the Broncos.
Sorry? Yeah, it'd be funny if it was, actually.
he honored his handshake agreement. Good on him.
Yep.
It's,
I think
he should play reserve grade for the rest of the year, though.
I think when Newcastle brought him in, they knew the chance to re-sign him were going to be very low.
They had a crack, though. They didn't reject a three-year offer.
They gave it a crack. I can't say whether it's an upgrade or a standard grade. I don't know. The Newcastle Knights are starting to become the Brisbane Broncos of their halves combinations. I think through the year, I can't even keep track. But, oh, well. It'll be going to a Queensland club. Meanwhile, one of the Queensland clubs have confirmed that Mitch Dunn and Jake Granville will both feature for the Cowboys in 2023. The club has activated an option for Granville, and Dunn has agreed a one-year extension to remain in Townsville. And I think we've already covered the Josh Alloway deal. I mean, he'll be at the club to the end of 2025. We're up to date there. NRLW, so the Titans have finalised their squad. Former Bronco Roxy Murdoch, the last key recruit to join the club. So it's Titans' eighth major recruitment for the upcoming season. She joins former Broncos teammates Lauren Brown and Higiga Mosby at the Titans to join Brooke Sadler, Shante Kiriratu, Lily Rose Colt, Philia Kia, Georgina Tuolahi, and Sophie Butler. Roosters have finalised their squad through signing Jill LaRue, Sammy Bremner to make a return to the NRLW with the club. She'll join Jada Taylor, Shannon Rose, Jasmine Strange, and Angelina Katoa. That is perfect for the Roosters as Corbin Baxter will be off with maternity leave. And she is pregnant, so congratulations. All right, let's have a look at the round that has just wrapped up. So we'll start with Casualty Ward and Judiciary. So horrible news for the Storm, and they're in a really rough period at the moment, losing three games back to back to back, which is very unlike the Storm. Ryan Papenhuyzen is done for the season after basically fracturing his kneecap. not a non-painful injury, extremely painful. So this happened midway through the first half, immediately taken to hospital with recovery time after surgery, set to sideline him for the rest of the year. Melbourne, yeah, they have not had a good run either with form, but also with regards to injuries and off-field controversy. This has been a very un-Melbourne-like season with the Cam Munster, Brandon Smith stuff all at the start of the year. Pappenhausen's continued run with injury. The exodus of senior players that they know is coming at the end of this season. It's been a year of controversy for the Storm, and at the moment they're kind of struggling to deal with it, as most clubs would, with all this sort of piling up. So horrible news for Pappenhausen. What promised to be such a good year for him, with talks of the New South Wales jersey, have unfortunately ended on this note. Josh Adokar limped off Accor Stadium with a glute injury against the Rabbitohs. So he's still waiting on scans with regards to the severity of that. Aaron Shute tested positive for COVID. We already talked about that one. Unfortunately, Billy Smith, again, ACL, yeah. Torn ACL.
Oh, mate. He was considered... He was one of the best guys coming through. He's big. He's fast. And I don't know if he can come back from this one. Like, I really hope he does.
Is that his third one?
Oh, yeah. Plus a shoulder injury as well that brought him out. I'm pretty sure he tore his AC joint at one point too.
Satili Taupanua dressing gown as well. Sorry?
Are you wearing a dressing gown? Or,
no, that's okay. My Reebok sport. Okay. I'm still in my work uniform.
I think I said it last pod. You see Jaden, someone come back from Jaden Bradley, torn Achilles. You're like, yes, don't care what team you are. See someone like this young guy. I wouldn't even think he's 25 yet.
No.
You know, multiple ACLs, and he's finally starting to get some consistent game time. And this happens, and you just feel horrible for him. And the thing about him is that when he does come back, he plays like two or three games in reserves, and then he gets brought back up straight up to the first division team because they have got wraps on him, but he's that good. Like, it's just
the NRL talent's there. It's just the body's not, unfortunately. Roosters also lost to Tilly Topanua to an ACL in the same game. You could see it. He jumped up for a ball, landed, and you saw the knee buckle. And it's a different way for an ACL to occur. Well, it's a fair bit of force to come down on the knee. A lot of the times, if there's no contact, it's less obvious. But yeah, now he went down in a screaming heap, and then they also lost Takiaho to a fractured cheekbone. Not a good day for the Roosters. I guess some positive news. Luke Keary most likely be back next week for round 19 from his concussion, as will Jared Werriar-Hargreaves from his hamstring injury. And Tuku Tapua and Renifer Tony returning to full team training.
The advantage it's slim advantage at best for Billy Smith and Tupanero. So like 8 to 9 months recovery on ACLs. I'm not sure about repeated because I'm pretty sure they're going to put a zipper on fucking Billy Smith's knee sooner or later. But when they should be round about fully fit by the time 2023 season starts. There's 8 or 9 months until that happens. If there's a slim positive about it, that's probably the only one, unfortunately.
Yeah, that'd be the only one. Moses Suli, who's been having a fantastic year for the Dragons, he'll be sent for scans after rolling his ankle. Rolling the ankle doesn't sound like much, but there are so many things that could go wrong when you roll your ankles. Let's hope for Dragons fans and for Moses' sake that that's nothing too serious. Edric Lee suffered a foot injury, which the winger fears is a recurrence of what Sorry missed last season. Knights also lost Tyson Frizzell and winger Dominic Young to rib injuries. And Simi Sasagi left the field with a shoulder injury late in the match. So the loss to Manly was compounded there with some injuries. This was the real no, another hard luck story. Alex Twal, big favourite of the podcast here, will sit out the remainder of the season after he continues his recovery from concussion. So he's had three concussions this year, two in the NRL, one in preseason. And from advice of specialists, I'd told him to sit out for the rest of the season. So hopefully, obviously, he'll take that advice at NRL level. Let's just hope he rests and comes back safer in next season.
Tigers stop also sticking your nose everywhere, mate. Fucking hell. Man.
Tigers also lost Nerfaluma and Roberts pre-game in their clash due to illness, while Stefano Uddumakanu will miss at least 6 weeks with a fractured wrist.
That's all they need.
Yeah, I obviously wasn't keeping up with all the pre-match stuff for the Tigers. May have changed my tip because, yeah, they lost three or four, but even so, they still should have.
If I had to pick four players in that team who they have to keep on the field at all costs, it'd be Laurie, Dewey, Twal, and Uddumakanu, and they lost two of them.
Well, I'd say not for him as well, but yeah, Uddumakanu. He's, yeah. All right, judiciary. Jordan Rapana faces at least two games on the sideline, charged with two offences in Sunday's win over the Storm. Grade one shoulder charge, and it's his second shoulder charge season of the offence. The charge carries a 3 grand fine, increasing to a 2-game ban if he fights a charge and is unsuccessful. He also faced a 2-game ban for a careless high tackle on Seve as well. I should have mentioned the shoulder charge was on Seve. So it's 2 games or 3 games if he challenges the charge and loses. Other players charged, Mitch Kenny, Raymond Fatala-Marina, and Nelson Asofa-Solomona. They all received fines for misdemeanors. Jason Tomlin also had a grade one shoulder charge, entered an early guilty plea, $1,500 fine. Oof. All right, talking about Tamalolo, let's get to game one and the try that was called a no try, which is ridiculous. Cowboys, Sharks, first game of the weekend, Friday night up in Townsville. Sharks 26, Cowboys 12. And Cowboys were denied a try early on in the second half, I believe, when Tamalolo did his thing, stepped off his right, cut straight through the Sharks defense, palm one, ran past another, had a, it was Reece Robson on his inside, who'd given him the ball from dummy half, running behind him as a support player. Tamalolo came into contact, slowed him down a touch. Reece Robson ended up in front of him by half a step to a step, and he went across for a try. All Cronulla put their heads down. They all went back. No complaining. Cowboys were celebrating. Looked like a clear try. They went upstairs. They deemed that Reece Robson obstructed Braden Hamiñuele from stopping Tamalolo from half a metre out of the line from making a clean tackle on him. This one was complete and utter lack of common sense in the bunker. The fact that for 99% of that play, Reece Robson was a support runner. He overruns, not by any fault of his own. Tamalolo was stopped in a tackle, slowed down in a tackle. And then what is meant to literally disappear into thin air.
Yeah.
I'm watching that as a casual fan, I'm going to say, this team's getting penalised because his teammate is trying to help him score a try by being there to catch the ball if he needs it.
Yeah, and it's another case of, because I'm usually a big fan of the obstruction, how they've justified it this year, because they've any run behind, no, except for the... Yeah,
and there was none of that in this whatsoever.
Well, hard and fast of it is that happened 5 metres out from the side try line. Last week during the, and I'm not complaining here because it's a legitimate try, but last week during the Newcastle South game, South made a break, and no, it was the intercept for Cody Walker actually, I think. Hmm. And I don't know what it was, but South made a break, they ran and scored. 10 metres behind that, Dominic Young was chasing and got caught up with a South Sydney player. As no fault of anyone. It was that's what happens when people were chasing. They both fell over. And it was 20 metres out from the trial. And a lot of people are going to go, you know, he wouldn't have got the try. Dominic Young is very quick. Early in the game, yeah, he ran down Jaden Dikarima in the exact same situation, saved a try. That happened 20 metres out. This happened 2 metres out. And one player threw his arms out, was obstructed. If you're at a, if you're in a, what's the word, supporting play, you cannot be done for obstruction unless you change, physically change direction in front of another player. You can slow down all you want. You can speed up all you want. You are in a, you are behind the football, so you cannot be done for obstruction. And the fact that this got done, I was just, because I'll admit, I didn't actually watch it live, but when I replayed it, I was, actually, I think I pissed off the boys of Nick and Wally, Nick and Adam, about over the week. Fair crack. I do apologise to both of you. But I was, I arced up about it, and Wall was like, mate, I'm just defending myself. Like, I'm agreeing with you, just relax. But no, it was horrible. And
if you haven't seen it as well, watch it, because Robson's there in support. He actually gets pushed, because there's like pretty much almost a scrum in underneath the goalpost, because Tamalo is causing so much damage. He ended up busting like four tackles on that run. The two players coming across had no chance of stopping him. None.
Yeah, it's just a, it's just another one of those cases that anywhere near the trial line, the rules are completely different than we're out on the field. Because if they're out in the field and a supporting player got obstructed, they wouldn't give a shit. Like, it's irrelevant. Another case that you can make is that, as Adam said, Reece Robson got pushed. That's attacking a player without the ball. So it could have gone the other way too. Like, it's just so much wrong with it. And
it was horrible. And it was a big turning point in that game, because Cowboys were undermanned. Todd Payton decided to rest all of his Origin players bar Gilbert. So no Nanai, no Holmes. Missing another one there, Dearden, etc. So they were pretty undermanned. The Sharks, only Origin representative Talakai played in the game. So they were pretty much full strength. And Cowboys, the game was closer at that stage. Cowboys would have either taken the lead or tied it up. And the very next set, Sharks go the length of the field and score a try. Now, the no try ruling doesn't excuse the Cowboys from not allowing the other team to go an entire field. But obviously, there is a mental lapse, because you've gone from the high of an emotion of an awesome individual try, the Tamalolo tries that we're used to seeing, that no other forward in the comp can do what he just did, to...
except Dave Clemmer.
Disbelief and, I'd say, complete frustration, anger and confusion to trying to get your head back on. And to me, it's always like, look at the defensive team. No one was complaining. No one was upset. Well, they were upset for letting the try in, but no one was thinking there was foul play. And even the Sharks guys, when they got the ball, they're kind of like, oh, okay. It was pathetic. And we're talking about that instead of the freaking game itself. Credit to the Sharks. Cowboys have made Townsville a hard place to play again. And the fact that they got away by 14 points shows, to me, that's credit to the Cowboys, because they were in this game for quite a period of time. It wasn't until the tries in 59th and 69th minute. And then the last, last 10 minutes, there was no points scored. So the Cowboys would definitely take a lot out of this game still, despite the loss. They were down 12-14 at halftime. But I think Sharks will take a lot out of it too, because that's a fair trip to go up to Townsville and to get away with a win that not many teams have done this year. Credit to them. And they're, dare I say it, swimming along nicely. So 2 points there for the Sharks. Second game on the Friday night. This is a bit of a contest, especially in the last 10 minutes. When I say contest, I'm saying it tongue-in-cheek, because it was 10-6 halftime to the Eels, despite having pretty much the run of the game. And they blew that out to 28-6 before the Warriors scored two tries in the last 6 minutes. And I know, let's just say, made Eels fans nervous, because we know Eels aren't the best team in holding leads. Wonga Blake getting a double in the first half. I thought Josh Curran had a really strong game for the Warriors. defensively very strong, really getting up in the face of some of the Eels players. Sean Lane had a very strong game, and Sivo getting across for his customary Combank try.
Sean Lane quietly has been having a very strong season.
Yes. He had a very strong season, 2 years ago, but it wasn't as quiet because everyone was really taking notice.
Yeah.
But I think the personalities in Parramatta, he's kind of a bit under the radar this year, and he's doing very well for himself again. I almost keep saying Eels needed this one to right the shit, but who knows what the hell's going to happen next week.
I'm off them, eh?
They come out this one 28-18 winners. Warriors did get Stacey Jones there, we said at the very last minute before the game. Finally testing negative to COVID, having been able to get over here and into the country quickly and all that sort of stuff. And I think Parramatta needed a game like this where it was very even across the board. Both teams had the same number of sets with the ball. Their number of runs each team had was only separated by two. It was a tight game with regards to ball possession, line breaks, tackles made, all that sort of stuff. And despite the scoreline, it was more of a grind sort of a game. At no point, even though the score blew out, it didn't feel as though the game was really out of hand at any stage. Like one team was completely dominating the other. And I think that's important to have games like that where the teams contending them in the lead up to the finals. So credit to Eels getting across, but Warriors by no means were they embarrassed. Same can't be said, unfortunately, for the Dragons. First game on the Saturday.
That's been the next two games.
Yeah. So the next two were the two kind of bigger blowouts of the weekend. This one was just points all round. We had a mate come home and bring her two boys, and they were playing with our kids, and they were going in and through the house, and Maddie and Chloe and I were all talking, and I just kept seeing in the background just try, 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 try. I had to go back and watch. Ben Hunt was freaking brilliant coming off Origin. First half, try, try, assist, 40-20. Really had the Dragons in this one. And at halftime, they're actually up by 2 points, 14-12. Unfortunately, the second half, they scored 12 points. Roosters scored 42. and that won't help. So, yeah, it was a 42-12 second half. Oof.
Yeah, I just, Dragons. There is whispers around that Griffin's in trouble. A lot of bullshit. We didn't really want to talk about it too much. All rumors, but I think Walser's best without Ben Hunt. Dragons are shot. Like there's no creativity. There's no direction unless he's on the field. And yeah, that's all you can really say. Like Ben Hunt, they scored 26 points off his back, really.
Cody Ramsey's try was individual. That was
he has surprised me going back to fullback. Start of the year, they had him and Tyrell Sloan swapping out in the trials for fullback, and we just sat there, including, I think you said it as well, like, Ramsey's a winger, don't put him back at fullback, yeah. And you got sitting there with Tyrell Sloan back there. And then Moses Mbai was doing a very serviceable job for about 6 or 7 weeks in the middle of the year.
Serviceable is a good word, yeah.
Yeah, and then Cody Ramsey's come out and he's just got this attacking flair just that no one expected, and he's passing the ball when it comes right, and he's accelerating off the mark to create into the gaps when it's the right decision as well. And I just don't think he's got any pressure on him.
No.
Which means he can just play his normal football game. And I think the advantage for Cody Ramsey, out of the three players we just mentioned that are Tyrone Sloan, both stand by him, he's the biggest.
Mm-hmm.
And a big fullback can never be underestimated. And yeah, it's not a bad thing to have. Big quick fullback too.
Yeah, one player I thought, talking about fullbacks, one player I thought had a really good game was James Tedesco. And it was a different, like, to me, these are the best.
Fucking animal.
Well, yeah, to me, these are his best games, these sort of stat lines. Where I know he can run for 300 metres or 290 or 80 metres. That's all well and good. And this coming from someone who watches Trbojevic, he can do those sort of metres as well. I'd prefer metres scale back. And he still ran for 190 metres, so not like he didn't run anything, off 17 hit-ups, which is a much better conversion rate, metres per hit-up. But he injected himself at more opportune moments, came away with 2 tries, 10 tackle breaks, a line break, as well as his support play as well. And I think by doing that, instead of going every set 100 miles an hour like he always does, it keeps the defense guessing more often than not.
You go on how good he is, but I just
Then I think the Roosters play more balanced like that, knowing that if they're in trouble, or West Tedesco is giving the ball and he can just run another. It's kind of like what they used to do with Tuivasa-Sheck at the Warriors that you always hated. Whereas here, I think this is their most balanced attacking game. Sam Walker shone in this one, which he hasn't done for quite a number of weeks. Joey Manu getting across for another 2 tries. And I'm talking about all those players. Who had the most running meters for the Roosters, do you think?
Wasn't Tupou, was it?
No, it was Victor Radley.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. What, did he run 250?
Yeah, 215 or something, I think. Now, I think they're a better team when it's all spread out between all of their threats. I just think there's some games where so much is put on Tedesco, or he puts it on himself at times, because he's like, I've got to lead from the front. I need to get us up to do this. It's easier to game plan for, even if it's not easy to execute, if you're trying to just shut down Tedesco as opposed to trying to shut down Tedesco, Walker, Manu, Radley's ball playing, Tupou, etc.
I love Walker, but I think the hearts of Kieran. I think while I believe Manu is the best centre in competition, pure athleticism, skill, and defensive reads, he needs to have the ball in his hand because, as you said, unlocks Tedesco. But talking about Tedesco, in the Origin, he ran for 12 kilometres with, I think it was 26 sprints above 20 metres. And this Origin game, he ran 9.5 with 22 or 21 sprints above 20 metres. Mate, if anyone deserves to sit in the fucking ice bath
and
drink beer, oh my God.
That's crazy. Like,
put that in context. In 4 days, he's run 21 kilometres, something like that, with over 45 sprints above the age, above
20 metres.
20 metres. That is insane.
I hope my 11 cert 3 guys are listening to that after they were complaining Monday morning that I made them do 12 sprints where the most was 40 metres.
If you gave 30 if you metres. Gave them much money, you know, 30 grand for what he did for Origin, I think they'd do it. But no, he's just an animal, man. Like,
that's kind of like 12 Ks in an Origin game as your number one attacking threat. I don't know. It might be different with the coaches now. I don't want my biggest attacking threat running that much in a game, because when it comes to the prime opportunities for him to put his stamp on the game, regardless of how superhuman he is, he's going to be fucking wrecked.
Well, that's the thing about Tedesco. I don't think he does get tired. Like, you see,
I don't think he shows that he's tired.
I just think he's one of the fittest guys ever played.
Oh, he is.
I know there was a bit of fan mail about me jumping on and ranting about Origin. I won't.
No.
But because we don't have the time tonight, because I will.
I've already got the next game up.
There's certain things I don't think Adam's going to agree with what I say about it.
We'll have time.
But
just not tonight.
Yeah, but yeah, no, I'll leave that alone.
Yeah, we've got 9 minutes to get through. We've got 9 minutes to get through the rest of the games.
How long do you want to spend on Newcastle versus Manly?
Not much. There wasn't much of a game here after halftime. Again, it was another close one, 14-6 at halftime.
Newcastle scored in the first couple of minutes.
Yeah, well, Cooler scored first. I love watching this kid, mostly from a selfish point of view, because last year I said this kid's going to be awesome. I can't wait to see him in the NRL. And one of the things that Dez has done well this year in the outside backs, and there hasn't been a lot of them, is he's hardly talked about him in the media, which I've loved, and hasn't put any undue pressure on him. And it's just, I think once he got his position, he's just set and forget, as he should have from the start. But
Nari Tuala's, oh my God.
Yeah, it's allowed him to grow into the league. And I think last night was his best overall game. He scored a try, made a break that ended up leading to the Olakuatu try, which is the broken play. And he's just deadly. His footwork and then acceleration. Okay. This is an old-fashioned beat-up. While the score was only an 8-point gap at halftime, I think it took a lot of the Knights' energy stocks out. And then Milford being sin bin in the last minute. While I don't think Manly scored till the 10th minute
Newcastle
of that sin bin, actually scored a try. I think they may have felt it for the second half and Manly just outclassed them outside of Ponga, who had a really decent game for himself.
I'm really annoyed at Newcastle for getting, not for losing, but just getting beaten by that much.
Yeah,
there's certain players in that team. So Andrew Davey has scored 2 tries this year and they've both been against Newcastle. I know Adam's not going to like this, but Christian Tuipulotu, I wouldn't even have him playing reserve grade. I do not understand why Newcastle all game kept kicking a Jason Saab when this Muppet's on the other side. I was just like, oh. But, you know, what we lost to him doesn't matter. Cherry had a great game, flew through us.
Yeah, he played really well.
I think the best way to explain Newcastle is they've just bought a roster there. And you know that whole saying, team of champions over champion team?
Newcastle
can have a justification to have a team of champions with the roster they've got. Like, they've got some pretty quality players, but they just do not play well together. There's something wrong there. Like, I don't know what it is. I can't even put a finger on it at this point. You just sit there and when you look at the roster, you're like, it's not too bad, pushing for top 8 at one point. But then when you look at the mentality of the team, you're just like, come on, dudes. What's going on here? You identical twins, monster front rows who are going to be in New South Wales and potentially Australian team for the next 10 years. You've got an old head of front row, David Clemmer, teaching them. You've got Tyson Frizzell. You know, you've got Dan Gay guy. Someone's got to explain it to me. I just don't get it. I really don't.
I actually agree with you with all that. With regards to the definitely not playing together as a team. Manly scored one of, it's reminiscent to me, and this is going to be such an abstract comparison, but I've got a 1980s State of Origin DVD, and there's a try that the Maroons scored with down the blind side where it was a tap 20 metres in, and instead of throwing to the open side, they went straight back to the blind side and did this little pass sort of thing to get us for a try. And Manly did a try like that last night where it was 5th tackle, Cher Evans went down the blind side, and there was like a to and fro of passing between him, and then eventually it was Saab wrapping around, and Cher Evans just kind of popped the ball up, Saab grabbed it and scored. And I went, it was just such a pretty try. And immediately after that, I went, oh, we're going to miss that. Because while Schuss is talented-wise, that was a 100% football IQ try. As soon as Sherman's went, Foran went and saw what was on, and he was there in support like in a second. And that's what's going to miss. Yeah, I didn't want to bring it up. I don't really
hear the rumors about.
I don't want to put any
Foran doing stock a cherry.
That. No,
oh, mate, if that happened, that would be hilarious.
No, that's not what this is about.
That would be so. So just so everyone knows, there's rumors that Foran, that Manly have got more money to pay.
No, that's not even part of this story.
And there's a chance that Foran might do a Cherry Evans and backflip on the Titans. That'd be so funny.
So none of that was accurate because regardless, Manly's not signing Foran because they don't have the money to do it, even if to pay on them leave. It's, and this is a new rule that the NRL's put in since then, that if a player is no longer interested in going to the club they've signed for, it's up to the club that they've signed for to grant a release before the player has played a game for the club. Titans would be more likely to release Foran from his contract to go back to Manly. They don't have to. And he hasn't at any stage said that he wants to go back to Manly because Manly's not going to sign him anyway. They've made that pretty clear.
You got some pretty agile halves there, mate.
Well, let's just go. Everyone wants them because they're the best, but Cherry's never backflipped and
Cherry Evans did backflip.
We've been through this so many times.
All right, next game, 16. Talking about Gold Coast. Broncos 16.
And in the end, it's Gold never the player's 12. Fault anyway. Blame it on your club, blame it on the NRL. Never blame it on the player.
Ah, you got more of a chip in your shoulder than I do. Okay, Broncos 16, Gold Coast 12. I care about 12. My family. this was actually a really good game. 45th minute, it was 12-10. And then the 55th minute, Adam Reynolds scored that try after a really good offload. Was that Gamble he offloaded that? But the good thing about it, that last 25 was just good football too. Like they're beating the shit out of each other, Broncos trying to hold the lead and Gold Coast trying to catch the lead. It was a good game. I didn't mind watching this.
It was funny about how putting AJ Brimson at fullback, he played really well because he's a fullback and they had him at fullback and that like worked because he's a fullback at fullback. I thought that was a masterstroke. Not putting Jack,
it's got
not
a trying headline. To put him in
at 5'8".
Aaron Furin's move to the Gold Coast might be not as secure as it looks.
Might be what?
Backflip, not off the table for Titans recruit.
Yes, it's easy for journalists because they have to do any research. But anyway, this is almost like the West Tigers Penrith one where if there was ever a game for the Titans to win for the second half of the season, it would have been this one. And yes, Broncos have got some talented youngsters and yes, they've got Adam Reynolds, but they also didn't have a bunch of their players, including one Peyton Haas, who's still their engine room. It was a good game of footy. It was a lot lower scoring, I think, than a lot of people thought. It was almost looking like it was going to be nil all going into halftime at one stage till Tanner Boyd broke the deadlock and it was 6-0 at halftime. And I did like Holbrook's move of putting Aaron Clark into the middle and playing Aaron Booth at dummy half where he should have played weeks before this. But another win through the origin period for the Broncos. Keeping their position in the top five solidified. All right, for these last three, we're just going to go through. Penrith 18 defeated the Tigers 16. Raiders 20 beating the Storm 16 down in Melbourne to hand Melbourne their third straight loss on top of all the injury dramas. And then to finish off the round, Rabbitohs 36 defeating the Bulldogs 28. And I heard that Matt Burton watched a high ball. Good on him. And you'll start developing some other skills.
Well, you know, if actually I was at Origin, you're going to leave it alone.
Yeah. Even like my students came in, I think on the Thursday going, I think one of the first questions was, so does Matt Burton do anything except to kick the ball high? I was like, I'm sure he does, but all the pros in the media only talk about his ability to kick the ball really high.
And I'm legitimately worried about your teaching ability if they said that.
Well, they're talking, no, because they're getting their information off the NRL media. I'm going, well, they are talking about like no one else in the league can do it. And if it actually led to something, maybe it'd be worth the skill. But, you know, let's hope he turns into something.
Okay, now I know why your kids aren't learning anything.
Wow, he can kick the ball.
Just have a very, very short memory from game two, that's all.
Oh, when you get put into a hole, anyone can run through that.
No, I went to bomb. He made Murray Taulagi look silly.
Yeah, luck of the draw.
That's why Murray Taulagi bought a rat test off Cam Munster.
God, my favourite stat from Origin, 11 bombs to 1. Queensland only need 1 to get a result, not 11. Jeez. Anyway, halftime, 16 to 10.
Mate, we're not talking about Origin because you're going to set me off again. Went off, like I said,
20 points to 18 in the second half. So a 6-point gap turned into an 8-point gap. Like Bulldogs are at least entertained. They're good to watch. They're putting up points. Unfortunately, they let in a lot again. I don't know. Like I guess if I was a Bulldog supporter, I'd be pleased with how the last 5 or 6 weeks have gone, considering the absolute hell you've gone through the last 3 years.
You know what? What I'd be glad about and what I would love to see out of Newcastle, Warriors, Dragons, you know, those sort of teams.
Effort.
I would just love to see improvement, which Bulldogs have not improved for the last 2 years, but as Adam said, for the last 5 weeks, they've definitely improved.
Yes.
Like they're playing a more open sort of football, more attacking sort of football. That, you know, even I believe their defence rolls off that. They're more confident defence because of that.
If you're going to lose, at least compete and, improve doing it.
Yeah, it'd be something that, as I said, those other teams could definitely learn from because, you know, the Dean Pay era at Bulldogs was just shit show from the time he signed it because he was never going to be considered a high-end coach because the play, the cattle he had and the salary cap issues he inherited were never going to fit. But the thing you could always say about the Dean Pay-led Bulldogs is, no matter what, man, you knew they played them. Like if you beat them by 50, you walked off with bruises because they played very hard and they competed. They just did not have the overall ability to beat you. But if they got hold of you, you knew they got hold of you. And it's something that a lot of teams in NRL could really look back to and go, you know what? Yes, that's something we should start doing, having a bit of pride in how we're playing.
Since Mick Potter took over, Bulldogs have scored 18 points in 6 of their 7 games that they've played. They've scored 18 points or more. 22, 24, 18, 34, 36, 6. That was the outlier against the Sharks. They lost 18-6. And then 28 against the Rabbitohs. I think it'd be pretty hard pressed to find any team throughout the whole comp that's been scoring that many points consistently over those rounds. The downside is they're letting in 34, 30, 18, and then 36. The two teams that they did let in less were the Eels when they beat them in that beat up 34-4, and then the Tigers 36-12. So next week will be a game similar, I guess, to that West Tigers one where they got the Titans at Combank. If I'm a Bulldog supporter, I'm looking at a scoreline like 30-12 or something like that to show that real progress has been made, especially by comparing yourself to teams in the same position on the table. So they beat up on the Tigers, who were a spot below them. They're versing the Titans, who are now a spot below them. And then the following week, they've got the Knights, who are a spot above them. So I guess this would be a benchmark for Knights and Titans in the coming weeks. Hey, this is a team that's won 2 of the 3 past Wooden Spoons. What, now they're beating up on us? Or are we still beating up on them as we have been? So that'll be really interesting. How are you feeling about that one, Jared?
Yeah, right. Go. 2 weeks. 100%.
Knights versus Bulldogs. That'll be, yeah, that'd be a great show of progress or lack of.
It's just, it's absolutely a horrendous thing to say about this level of football. Like, it's so bad that they're not playing together as a team, but, like, there was no, for the Manly game, there was just no, other than Ponga, like, some of the efforts were just like, oh, come on. And this is the high-end players. Like, Dan Gagai, that try that Adam mentioned, if you actually watch Dan Gagai, he's actually stuck in the mud in that game, in that moment, that he just completely gets outfooted. And for someone of his experience and caliber, that shouldn't be happening. Like, he yeah, it's just...
And the only silver line, I guess, you can take from the Roosters' injuries is you guys got the Roosters next week.
Yeah, but they've still got, as you said, Maria Hargraves and bloody who are Kieran coming back. Fucking hell.
So outside of Penrith at the top and, yeah, outside of Penrith at the top, there's no real massive gaps on the ladder. So after 17 rounds, everyone's had their bye. Penrith on 34 points with an 8-point gap over the Cowboys. So 4 wins ahead. Cowboys and Sharks both on 26 points. So 12 wins, 5 losses. Cowboys quite a way ahead on 4 and against. Storm, Broncos, Eels, all on 24 points. Rabbitohs on 22, Seagulls on 20. That is your top 8. Followed by Roosters, Raiders, Dragons, all on 18 points. Also with a final shot. Warriors and Knights starting to really run out of time. They're 4 wins outside the top 8 with 7 rounds to go. Pretty much win on from here out. Bulldogs on 10 points, Titans and Tigers both on 8 points with 3 wins, 14 losses. And the for and against between the Tigers and the Titans is only 22 points. So wooden spoon is up for grabs. We've got the Bulldogs, like I said, versus the Titans next week. They could create a 4-point gap to one of their rivals there. All righty, that'll do us. We'll be back for our Round 19 preview show on Thursday morning, and we'll see you then. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to Six Again. Connect with the show on Twitter, Instagram, and the Six Again website. All links via the show's bio.